everyone. I'm Pam Stack, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, we're in our second week of Nasty Women January, Female Crime Fiction Writers Month, and with me tonight is a very special author. Her name is Dina Santarelli. I can't wait for you to meet her. Don't go away. Much for being with me tonight on Authors on the Air. Take this pen and write down the number because you're going to want to call in and join my conversation with Dina Santarelli. The number is 347-633-9609. My guest tonight is a writer of 20 years, although I swear to look at her, you'd think she had to start at birth with a pen in her hand. She's just as young looking, and I'm very jealous, but she's beautiful. But she's got 20 years of writing experience that goes across all kinds of genres. She's written travel, entertainment, lifestyle, bridal, pop culture. She's written for Newsday, CNN Money, First for Women. She's the executive editor of Salute and Family magazines. She's interviewed celebrities like Norman Reedus, Vince Vaughn, James Gandolfini. When he was alive, gosh, what a wonderful guy. Tim McGraw, Carrie Underwood, Angela Bassett, Kevin Bacon, and more. She is a book writer, obviously, that's why we're talking to her, but she's also collaborated on a book that I'm going to read, and I've posted on my Facebook page, called Raising Men, Lessons Navy SEALs Learned from Their Training and Taught to Their Sons. It sounds fascinating. I'm so excited to have with me tonight author of Baby Grand, and let her tell you all the other books, Dina Santarelli. Hi, Dina. Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Hi, Pam. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here. You know, we did a shout-out for female crime fiction writers for this month. Did it way back in November. And your name was mentioned so often as being one of the best authors to speak to. That's how we actually got together. So thank you very much for agreeing to come on the show tonight.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. So you have such a long history of writing that maybe I joked around about you writing since birth, but I bet you anything that's not far from the truth. You probably have been writing since you were a kid, based on all the things that you've been doing. Would I be guessing correctly about you?
Well, I actually have been writing since I was very young. But at the time I was writing, I was always very interested in storytelling, and I would just recently I found these little stories that I wrote when I was like 6, 7, 8 years old on construction paper, you know, in crayon and pen.
Wow.
And
sure.
It wasn't until though much later that I really thought about writing as a career. I think that I always wanted to be a novelist, deep down, or a storyteller, but I think when I first started out I didn't have the confidence in my writing that I thought I should have. And I was actually a math science whiz, and so I sort of veered in that direction during high school, where I was taking honors biology classes and chemistry classes and also math classes. And I was also very good in English, but not to the extent that I was in the other classes. But then what happened was I ended up joining the high school newspaper. And I found that I really had an interest in journalism and that type of writing. It was very straightforward. It was very made sense to me. And so,
sure, just a fact, ma'am, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I think it sort of suited my style. You know, it was very direct. not very flowery. And even to this day, my novels, if you read my novels, you'll see that I sort of write like I write novels like a journalist. where
you do.
I, like you said, I stick to the facts and I sort of get to the point, and it's very plot driven. So my novel writing actually stemmed from my career as a journalist, and I don't think I would have been able to be a novelist had I not been a journalist first.
You're not the first person to tell me that. I will say that. But first, let me just say, so you're one of those rare birds who is a left and a right brain thinker, and I'm so impressed. Because otherwise, how could you be so good in the maths and sciences and still be so great as a fiction novelist? Congratulations on that.
Well, to be honest with you, I think I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, continue.
I was going to say, I think that it took a long time for that to develop. I don't think, the writer that I am today, and I don't think I'm a great writer. I think I'm a good writer. I think I'm a okay writer. But even to get to this point, it really took those 20 years of being a journalist to get here and learning a lot and learning how to observe and learning how to talk to people and meeting all kinds of people. Because as a journalist, I really traveled the world, and it really lent itself. It really opened up my eyes in terms of what I needed to do as a novelist.
That's interesting to me. I actually was very involved in journalism in high school also. For the newspaper and the yearbook. So, yes. although I had my love for reading a long time before that, I have to say, a long time before that, but it certainly didn't hurt. Although I am not nearly creative enough to be able to write a fiction book. I can write nonfiction like nobody's business, though. However, you're not the first person who's come from journalism and then turn thriller novelist or mystery. I think that the who, what, where, why, and how of it all really helps to create fiction, because essentially you have to tell those parts in your book anyway, don't you?
Yeah. I think it helps us ask the right questions. Where exactly, like you said, the who, the what, the where, the why, and the how. And for me, I was actually, and I think I still am, even though people laugh at me when I say this, I was a very shy person, very shy girl. And so actually being a journalist was very challenging for me, because as a journalist is the one who goes on the scene and sticks the microphone or the pad in someone's face and says, what can you tell me? And that kind of thing. And that really went against everything that I was. I was the wallflower. And so over time, I really built up the courage to go into a room and be able to ask people questions and be able to step up to a stranger and say, hi, I'm so-and-so, can you tell me this? Or to make the observations that I started having to make as a journalist. And also the deadlines of journalism were helpful to me in terms of just, getting to a routine of writing. I think there's this fallacy that people think when you're a novelist that you sort of just write, whenever you feel inspired. But if that were the case, I would never write a book ever. Because I think what makes me write novels is the fact that I just sit down every day and I sort of force those words out. They don't just sort of sometimes
Absolutely.
There are. Yeah, sometimes you are inspired, but those moments are very fleeting. More often it's just, sitting down and just pushing them out and forcing them out.
Absolutely. I hear that. I hear exactly what you're saying, and it makes complete sense to me. You have to have some type of a discipline, I suppose, to a certain greater or lesser extent, depending on how much you want to write and how much you don't want to write. But if you want really to put out a beautiful product, you have to sit down and write it, and you have to sit down and polish it, and you have to know your craft and so on. So what you're saying makes complete sense to me. I have a great interest in learning about the other writing that you did before we get to your book, because
Sure.
I have so many questions about your books. You are currently the executive editor for Salute and Family Magazines. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Are these pertaining to military families? Because the reason I ask is, and I'm looking at your book, Raising Men, and just wondered if that's what they're geared toward, military families.
Yes, Family Magazine has a circulation of about 500,000, and it's a lifestyle magazine that's read by military families. And Salute Magazine has a circulation of about 200,000, and it's read by active duty military as well as reserve and guard. And both magazines are free of charge and available on military installations and in commissaries and places like that.
So how did those come about? Tell me what the crossover for you is with military, because obviously you have a connection somehow along the way, and I'd like to hear about it, please.
To be honest with you, when I left my full-time gig as an editor back in the late 90s, and I left because I had my first child, and I decided to go freelance. It was just a matter of me trying to, you know, find regular gigs and really get my name out there into different magazines. And this was just happened to be serendipity. The editor of these magazines had decided to retire, and the publisher was looking for a new editor. And I happened to be perusing MediaBistro.com at the time, and I came upon this opportunity. And the magazines are based on Long Island, which is where I'm from. And we ended up meeting at a local diner, and we sort of clicked. I mean, other than that, I really didn't. And the interesting thing is, I'm always up for a challenge, and I really didn't know all that much about the military. I mean, obviously, my grandfather served in World War II, and my father served, but beyond that, I didn't have like that ready or day-to-day knowledge of the workings of the military, and so I was fascinated by, you know, and interested in learning about that. So I took on the job, and it has been such a wonderful experience meeting so many military families and military members, and it's just been wonderful.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
From that, did Raising Men come, or was Raising Men before those magazines?
Actually, Raising Men, which is a book that I co-authored with Eric Davis, a former Navy SEAL, that actually came about. It was something separate from the military magazines. I had started writing nonfiction books around 2009, 2010, and so it was just a project that was, and I had been working with various book packagers and literary agencies on those books. And this was something that just happened to come my way because I was working with the military magazines and because I had worked on a parenting book also. And so this sort of combined both of those passions. Yeah.
I want to go to something that's completely different. But first of all, I want to say congratulations on the success you've had with the magazines, that you've just embarked on something really amazing. And before we leave the subject, I want to know about Raising Men. And I want to know about this book because I love the title, Raising Men, From Fathers to Sons, Life Lessons from Navy SEAL Training. Now, I don't pretend to know anything about Navy SEAL training except for what's in romance books, and, you know, it's still fiction. So... I've been by the base in Virginia, and I've been by the base in California, so I, you know, but that's totally the most information I have on Navy SEALs other than what you read in the paper, and I'm sure that's just for publicity purposes. Tell me about this book, please, because I don't have a son, but I have brothers, and I have nephews who are small, and I would love to read this and learn something. So will you share some information about Raising Sons?
Sure. This book was sort of it was the brainchild of Eric Davis, who, as I said, is a former Navy SEAL, and he had learned so many things having gone through BUDS and having, you know, been a sniper instructor, and he had learned so much as a man, and he has four children. He's got three girls and a son, and he so wanted to impart that knowledge, you know, to them and also to others who were struggling with raising their children. And a lot of it is what I loved about the book is I feel like I'm so proud of it. Because and not only did I learn so much, as you said, I mean, there's only so much that I knew about the Navy SEAL culture until I met Eric. And I've learned so much about it. But I just love that his lessons are just, I don't know, they're just, you know, like straightforward and to the point. And, you know, he doesn't pull any punches when he gives his experiences. I mean, to me, that's the beauty of this book, how he really shows by example, and he takes us through all of his experiences as a Navy SEAL, and the danger and the strength that it took to get through BUDS, which was, you know, the training, the boot camp. You know, he was losing toenails. The things that got him through are just fascinating, and how he sort of parlays that knowledge to parenting. I think it's one of the projects I'm most proud of.
How wonderful!
Yeah,
it's gotten such great reviews too, by readers. I don't mean by professionals or anything else, because when someone writes a book like this, or in your case, co-authors it, it really is about the readers, isn't it? What they feel about it. That's the most important part of it. So congratulations on being a part of that success. I want to take a minute and remind everyone, I'm speaking to Dina Santorelli, and you are absolutely welcome to call in and ask her anything you want. You can ask me. We don't know if we'll tell you the truth, but we'll answer you somehow. The number is 347-633-9609. Maybe we'll tell you a lie. I don't know. It depends on what you ask. In the meantime, it was when I saw your picture, when you sent me your profile picture, and I thought, oh my God, she's so innocent and so wholesome looking. So
I get that a lot,
and
actually.
So nice. Yeah, and then she's writing about the mob, for crying out loud. So here's what I learned about you, that not only did you, your big breakout fiction is called Baby Grand, and you were the runner-up for Shelfbound Best Indie Book. You received honorable mention in the 22nd Annual Writer's Digest Book Awards. You've gotten absolutely brilliant reviews from readers, but also by other authors who just have gone crazy over this. I mean, I'm looking at some of the authors who have blurbed you. And, for example, Chris Nixon, who's the author of the Richard Nottingham series of historical mysteries, had this to say, that you have a gift of a natural storyteller, which is a word you mentioned earlier, and we're going to talk about that. Baby Graham sweeps along at a frantic pace, plunging the reader into a tale with wonderfully real characters you care about. It's very human, very exciting, and absolutely engrossing. How delicious is that review?
I know.
I think it's fabulous. So you have a very interesting premise for this book. Will you share with the audience, please?
Sure. The book takes place in contemporary New York. Essentially, the governor of New York's infant daughter disappears without a trace from her crib from the executive mansion. Hours later, down in New York City, Jamie Carter, who is a newly divorced and down-and-out writer, she is abducted from the streets of Manhattan and then is whisked upstate, where she's forced by her captor, who is this handsome, charismatic ex-war hero, businessman, to care for the kidnapped child. And this is all done in a plot to delay the execution of a mobster who's on death row.
Interesting. So readers are going to have to read to find out why she was abducted.
Right.
And that's just the part of it, because tell the name of the mobster.
The name of the mobster is Don Bailino.
Okay, but there's a reason I had you say that, because I want to say that the customer reviews on this book, for really, it's a debut novel for all intents and purposes, because this is so brand new, have been outstanding. Great book. I highly recommend this book. 5 stars, page turner. More and more and more, the characters were well developed. The more I read, the more I wanted and needed to know more about them. It's a fabulous new writer of heart-thumping thrillers. This is a super thriller, a page-turner. Wow. So you've gotten such great reviews from readers that no matter what your contemporaries say, it really has to sit very well with you right now, doesn't it?
I'm humbled by it all. I really, you know, and I say this a lot, you know, when you're sitting in the dark, as I do sometimes writing novels, and you say to yourself, you know, is anyone going to care about these characters? Is anyone going to get the story and understand what I'm trying to do? And then when the book comes out and you see that readers are getting it and they really are embracing these people that you've created, I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm so thankful.
You know, it's because of your writing talents, and that's all there is to it. If you didn't write the book well, you wouldn't be hearing about all this. But it's interesting to me because now, here we are a year later, and there is a new book that just released in September. And what is the name of that book?
That one, the sequel is called Baby by Lino. And I have to say to you that I never intended Baby Grand to be a series. I intended it from the get-go to be what they call a standalone novel. There would only be one,
right,
one and done, and then I would move on. I remember this clearly. I was writing the final scenes of Baby Grand, and I thought to my, and I had it in my mind from the beginning of the novel how the book was going to end. And then I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't. There was one thing that had to happen for the book to sort of be over, and I just couldn't do it. And then all of a sudden I started to see the possibilities of how the characters would go forward into another story, and that became Baby by Lino.
I love it. And once again, rave reviews. As a matter of fact, I'm reading from Andrew Gross. Andy's been a guest on this show a couple times. He's a super nice guy. I've met him in person.
Oh, he's terrific.
He's on book tour, and I think he's actually just finished up a tour on the East Coast of Florida, but for his books. He says, Dina writes a terrific thriller. It will grip you to the end and long after. And then Brandon Webb says, highly recommended. Dina captures an amazing story and writes it incredibly well. I think that's wonderful that you're getting so many great reviews. You have all 5-star reviews on this book. Congratulations on its
success.
Oh,
thank you. I'm humbled and just grateful for anyone to just read it, you know, let alone take the time to review it. This industry is just, I think we spoke about this, before we went on air, and it's just this, I find, publishing and readers to be so generous and so giving of their time, and so just so wonderful. I mean, it's so, and I say this often, it's so unlike other industries where it's very cutthroat,
yes,
and, you know, this is just, you know, where if you're in the refrigerator industry, you know, if you're going to sell one refrigerator, your competitor is not going to sell any, so you're vying for that consumer. But in publishing, I mean, the more books, the merrier. You know, people are reading. If just
Absolutely.
Because they're buying my book doesn't mean they won't buy yours, and it's really nice.
Absolutely. No, I think it's a domino effect. When you start reading, especially if you read genre fiction, you will find that you want to read more and more and more. And I read all the time. I love reading. So to me, when I discover new readers or someone says, oh, I've read the best book, that goes down on my list. And you would laugh if you would see what my apartment looks like, because from floor to ceiling, I have books piled from floor to ceiling for to be read, and then on one of my 4 Kindles. So I think it's magnificent. And you're right. The writing community, I don't even want to say the publishing community. I want to say the writing community, because the publishing houses are something are completely different and removed from readers and writers, I think. And I have had a very unique opportunity to go to some conferences that are reader-writer conferences and some that are just writers, and meet my celebrities. My celebrities are writers. And I'm a bumbling idiot when I meet people in person.
Me too.
I'm almost in tears. I'm so excited about it, you know. I just was saying today on Facebook that for the first time in all the years I've been going to Sleep Fest, which is in Delray Beach in, on the east coast of Florida, I will be a moderator. I'm usually there as a part of the press. So I'm really excited about that. I'll be moderating a panel with a mystery author. And it's very exciting. Yeah, it's very exciting. So, you know, you think you're excited about it. Jeez, imagine how me is just a reader, a fangirl. You know, I'm almost too old to be a fangirl, but I am. But
you're
it's
never
tons of fun.
To be a fangirl.
Well, too bad, so sad. That's who I am, you know. I admit it. I accept that.
Me too.
I really do.
Especially, you know, I do a lot of these, as you mentioned before, I do a lot of celebrity interviews, and a lot of times I'm, you know, inside, as I'm trying to be so professional on the outside, I'm fangirling on the inside. Like, I can't believe I'm talking to this person. So I totally get that.
Well, you're no wallflower. I don't care what you say about being shy. I'm looking at Long Island Woman, and you are on the covers of at least three of their magazines. So, you're pretty well known, and you've been honored for being one of the best writers on Long Island, apparently. So good for you.
Again, I'm so humbled by all that. I really am. It's been the last, because I came out with Baby Grand in 2012, and since then it's just been amazing. You know, just the readers embracing the books, buying the books, embracing the books, coming to events. You know, it's been wonderful, and I look forward. I used to consider myself a journalist who writes novels, but as time goes on, I find myself more like a novelist who kind of does journalism on the side, that kind of thing. Like, I feel the shift
that
happening. Yeah.
You're making the shift slowly but surely. So so here's my question. Are you writing another fiction novel right now?
I am. I am actually writing the third book in the Baby Grand trilogy.
Oh, my gosh. So
because,
we have a series here. We
yes.
have a series character in Jamie, then, I should say, right?
I can't say because I would give the stuff away. But all I can say is the same thing happened at the end of Baby by Leno. There I was thinking, okay, there's just going to be two books and that'll be it. And then I had that moment where I thought, wait a minute, I can make one more. I could see it happening right before my eyes. So I decided to go with the trilogy, but that will be the end. It'll just be the three books. And then I have a lot of other ideas.
Well, so let's talk about that. You have a lot of other ideas. Now, since you're so active in just writing, you're editing, you're writing, you've done nonfiction books, you've done a lot of different things. So, and you said you had to learn how to observe and how to listen.
Yeah.
So obviously you're finishing up book number one, and this idea pops into your mind about how you can make book number two, and then ditto, so we will get a book number three. First, do we have a working title that we can share?
Yes, the third book is called Baby Carter.
Okay, so Baby Carter will be and we will see that when? Maybe?
I was thinking summer of 2018, but I think I'm going to push it up to the end of this year.
Wonderful. I'm so excited about that. You'll have to come back and we'll talk about it.
Oh, I'd love to.
So you're going to start after that. You will do probably a standalone, or maybe you'll do another little trilogy. Who knows? You know, one never knows what's going to happen. You didn't expect to do a trilogy this time. So when you're thinking about writing a book, where do your ideas come from? And if you have hundreds of ideas, because obviously you're very creative, how do you know which string to pull on those ideas?
Those are good questions. My ideas come from I wish I really knew, but they come from everywhere. Like I could be driving
sure.
my car to the supermarket and something will come to me. With Baby Grand, I was in my late 30s, and I was, you know, my freelance journalism career.
Late 30s? You're such a liar, late 30s.
No, I was.
You're such a liar.
And I had three kids.
You're like
I had 25. Three kids. And I thought, you know,
impossible.
I just. And that is true. And this, I thought, you know, if I'm going to do this novelist thing, I really have to get moving. You know, I'm running out of time. I always have this sensation that I'm running out of time. So I decided to go back to grad school so I can get away. Because my kids were young at the time, and I, you know, I couldn't sink with them around. They were just, you know, always asking me to eat. So I had to, like, go someplace where I needed to just, you know, concentrate on writing.
You've got to feed them once you have them. Oh, God, that's too funny. That was always asking me to eat. I love that comment. That one goes in my classic lines from authors. Damn kids are allowing me to feed them.
Yeah, I know.
Excuse me,
I can't concentrate. I just need to think. So I ended up going back to school. I went to Hofstra University, went back to grad school with the sole purpose of wanting to jumpstart this fiction career. So it was my last class right before I graduated. It was a long fiction class, and I thought to myself, okay, the book that I start writing in this class will be my first novel. And I thought about all these ideas that I had, you know, written on tiny pieces of paper, you know, all over the place. And I'm thinking, okay, which one of these am I going to choose? And I ended up choosing Baby Grand, and I'll tell you why, because I knew how Baby Grand was going to end. I had that last line written. I knew it in my, you know, I had it memorized.
Okay.
And I still ended
wow.
it that way. I mean, although the circumstances of the final scene changed in the end, I still ended it with that last line, and that's the only reason why I chose Baby Grand, because that was the only idea that I had where I really knew how it was going to end. But recently, it's funny, I was I had this dream recently where – And I don't write. I had never have. I didn't have any interest in writing science fiction or anything or fantasy. But I had this interesting dream recently where I woke up and I thought, wow, you know, and I have to write this down. And I wasn't even sure what I was writing down. But once I got it on paper, it all started to fall into place where it's this elaborate science fiction story that I think I'm going to tackle next after Baby Grand.
Oh,
but I'm
I
not
love
sure.
That.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. But
I'm
I do.
I'm so excited
I,
that you're. But you're going to try something new. That's so exciting.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, I love that.
I never thought, like, if you read some of my stories that I wrote when I was, like, 8 on construction paper, you'll see that they, like, even then I had a sense of, like, suspense. Like, I really liked the idea of, you know, being scared. Like, not gratuitously, like, gory sense or that kind of thing, but just, you know, like, what will happen next kind of thing. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah, and so that's what really, really appeals to me. And so I think that's where my sense of thriller comes from. I never thought of myself specifically as like an organized crime thriller writer or any type of thriller, but just the idea of suspense. So I think that I'd like to parlay that idea of suspense into a different kind of genre too and see how it goes.
I think that's magnificent. I think female writers are so much more courageous in trying out new genres or subgenres of fiction, I should say, because, you know, it used to be just fiction and nonfiction. And, and now, of course, with the advent of Amazon, we have genre fiction. But I think that's wonderful. I love that. I love the fact that you're going to take a chance because if you don't, how will you know if you will succeed or not?
Exactly.
And even if
exactly.
you don't come out with the book that's beloved by all, but you can at least say, I tried it, correct?
Right. Right. I agree completely.
Okay, so you have agreed to give away an audiobook of Baby Grand, correct?
Yes, of Baby Grand.
I'm so excited. Okay, so callers, whoever calls me first at 347-633-9609 and has a question for Dina is going to get an audiobook.
Yay!
Compliments of Dina Santorelli. And who could, you know, you can't beat that with a stick. Now, I've never listened to an audiobook, so I want to know who does the reading of Baby Grand for your book, and did it sound funny to you to listen to it? Or have you even listened to it?
The narrator of Baby Grand is a man by the name of Robert Tomley, and I think he's wonderful. And, yes, it was very, very bizarre to hear my words being spoken by a male voice. Because how the process goes is I listen to the book sort of chapter by chapter, and any corrections that need to be made in terms of pronunciation or, you know, if words are left out, they're made as we go. So, yeah, so it was at first it was a strange sensation, almost like as if I was hearing the book for the first time. You know, especially the really rough scenes. Like, there's sort of a rough rape scene early on in Baby Grand, like in one of the earlier chapters. And to hear it come from Bob's voice, it was scary. It was scary, and it was almost like, wow, you know, I wrote this, and I just couldn't believe it. But yeah, it's very exciting, and I'm not much of an audiobook reader, listener, I guess, myself. A lot of my friends are, but every now and then, if I'm in the car for a long car ride, I will put one in, and I love it. I love it.
I'm going to have to keep that in mind because everyone tells me that's the thing to do on a long drive. Now, my long drives are about 2.5 hours from one coast to the other in Florida, and I have a tendency to either listen to music or I'll listen to NPR. Sometimes I just forget what I'm listening to because my mind will be wandering. I'm thinking about shows or authors I'd like to interview and or books that I've read, because I think about books a lot. I'm constantly thinking about books and books that have made an impact on me and interviews where the authors have just been so spectacular that it's always on my mind, you know, because I want it to be good. I want it to be good for everyone.
Yeah.
I want the guests to enjoy themselves, but I want the listeners to enjoy themselves too. So I fade off, and I'm afraid that if I stick in an MP3 for a book, that I'm going to miss it. And then, you know, I'm going to have to start all over again, and I don't want to have to do that. Plus, to me, I will tell you, Dina, that reading a book, sometimes I find the prose so incredible that I want to read it out loud myself because I like how the words sound. I like the turn of a phrase, and you know, it ignites a different part of your brain when you listen to something that you're reading versus just reading it in your head. So, which begs the question, when you're writing, do you read any of your stuff out loud?
Maybe sometimes I do, but generally I don't think that I do. I sort of read it. I think I'm saying the words in my mind, but I don't know if they're actually reaching my lips to the point where I'm speaking them. But I completely relate to what you were saying about audiobooks. Because for me, if I'm listening to an audiobook, something might trigger like a word or a sentence or a scene might trigger an idea for me. And so as the book is sort of going along, I'm already thinking about something else and I miss half of it.
So
I completely relate to that.
And I have a friend, J.J. Hensley, who writes really great thrillers, who started writing because he and his wife would listen to audiobooks on their drive into work. And one day you know, they were muttering about a book, and he said, God, I could write better than this, you know. And his wife challenged him to do that. And sure enough, he writes some really great books.
Oh, that's great.
You know, you never know. But it's interesting because I think that if you listen to a book versus reading a book versus seeing a book turned into a film, you get different parts of that book, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. I think different parts of the book stand out.
What do you want readers to get from your books?
I really just want them to enjoy the ride. I want them to be immersed in this world that I've created, care about the characters, what they're going through, you know, sometimes be scared, sometimes be excited, sometimes be happy, and just, you know, be entertained. You know, there's so much going on in the world, and it's nice to have a place where you can go for a few minutes each day to just, you know, get your mind off of everything, just as if just for a little while. And so I hope they come away thinking, wow, you know, that was worth the you know, the $3.99, or that was worth the, you know, 4 hours that I spent, however much time they spent reading it.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I know I was entertained when I read your book, so, I liked it. I'm not going to, you know, give away any parts of it because it's not for me to say. I want everyone to have their own experience. But then again, I'm a critical reader, and a lot of books come across my desk every day, and I have an embarrassment of riches. I have my choice of reading material every single day, so if something doesn't grab me right away, I put it away and I don't go back to it. It's really sad, but as I say, it's an embarrassment of riches. I think I probably have over 100 books just sitting right in front of me. Those are not the ones that are behind the books that are, I have more than 100 books sitting right here that can be read. I get about 20 a week, so
it's
amazing. But I give away a lot of books, too. I give away a lot of books. As a matter of fact, let's have somebody call in and talk to you, and not only will we give away your audio book, but I'll go ahead and give away a book also.
Wow.
347-393-9609. Absolutely. And I'm happy to give everyone books. You know, I have so many of them. And I oftentimes have duplicates and triplicates, so it's my pleasure to give them away. While we're having listeners contemplate calling in, because a lot of times they don't, I'd like to – we're close to running out of time, and I don't want to lose you first. But I want to play final five with you, five quick questions and five quick answers, and hopefully we'll have fun with it. What do you say?
I'm ready.
The first thing I want to do, though, before we do that, is for you to tell everyone where they can find you on the web.
Sure. They can find me at my website, which is dinasantarelli.com. I'm also on Facebook at facebook.com/DinaSantarelliWriter or on Twitter at Dina Santarelli or Instagram at Dina Santarelli.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing those.
Of course.
And Dina's real good about answering too, especially on Facebook and on Twitter, because we've been tweeting and Facebooking and all. She's very, very good. She's one of those authors who actually answers her readers' mail and posts herself.
Oh,
I do. Doesn't leave it up to anybody else. So, okay. So my question to you is, whose book is on your nightstand that you're reading?
Oh, gosh, that's so funny. I just finished The Wonder by Emma Donoghue, and I started reading an author I've never read before, Colleen Hoover, and the title is It Ends With Us, and I just started it, and I'm already, you know, I'm kind of like you, where if I don't get hooked right away, I'm kind of like, oh, there's so many other books to read, but I'm hooked, and so I'm about to start chapter two, actually, right after we finish talking.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah.
So of all those amazing interviews that you did, who was your favorite?
My favorite? Oh, that's a toughie. That's a toughie. I had a few favorites. But I have to say one favorite of mine was someone you mentioned, James Gandolfini. I found him to be – and this was a phone interview – this was a phone interview, but I found him to be so humble and so gracious, and he was nothing like the character that he played on The Sopranos, Tony Soprano. Yeah, and he had done so much for the military that was under the radar in terms of donating his time and money, and he seemed to be such a wonderful person, so I would say James Gandolfini.
I would imagine, and I had read that he was a very humble guy, and that breaks my heart that we lost such a talented man so young in his life.
And so giving, so giving.
Yes. It's always, you know, interesting to me to find these things out later on, sadly. But, you know, the ones who keep it quiet, like George Michael, who was a huge philanthropist.
Yeah.
I think it's marvelous, you know, and how wonderful that he did that and how sad that we lost him so young. So James Gandolfini was your favorite. Are you a fan of mob movies?
I'm an Italian from New York. Of course I'm a fan of mob movies. Yeah, I grew up with them. I mean, the Godfather films, Goodfellas. In fact, the character of Don Bailino, who's my villain in the Baby Grand series, he is actually based on Robert De Niro, a younger Robert De Niro from like the 90s, you know, his Heat, Goodfellas period. And when I think of Don Bailino, that's who I think of. That's the face that I put on him. So yes, I'm a big fan.
Interesting. So pulling on that thread, do you give your characters faces? Can you say, well, if I ever turn this into a movie, this is where I would want to play this role? Have you done
sometimes.
That?
Yeah, sometimes. I
yeah,
mean,
so let's hear. Tell me who.
Okay.
What character? Jamie
Carter, who's the protagonist of Baby Grand. If I had to pick somebody, I could see her being played by the actress. It just escaped me. Jennifer Goodwin.
Okay.
That is her name, right? From Big Love and from Once Upon a Time.
You're asking someone who's never who doesn't have a TV. So I'm saying, okay.
Her brother,
I mean, I know some of these people, obviously, from when I did have a TV. But if it's somebody new, I'm not going to know who they are. I haven't had a TV in 10 years.
Oh gosh. Well, how about Edward Norton, the actor Edward
Norton?
Yes. I picture him. He's sort of who I modeled her brother Edward. I named him after him. On Edward Norton. Benicio del Toro was my inspiration for Ronaldo Rodriguez in Baby Grand.
Wow.
And obviously Don Bellino.
I love
him,
but he mumbles when he talks, you know. He's such an interesting man, isn't he?
He is, and I just imagine that big mop of a hairdo, you know, and that's how I picture Ronaldo. I just love it. One of my Hofstra professors was actually the inspiration physically behind my New York governor, Philip Grand. So I definitely put
beautiful.
A lot of faces to characters, but sometimes characters are faceless. Like, I think Jennifer Goodwin could play Jamie Carter, but at the same time, when I was writing Baby Grand, that wasn't necessarily who I had in mind. I sort of had this faceless protagonist. She could be like every woman, kind of.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, I have go-to books that I read all the time. Once a year rolls around and I'm thinking, okay, I've got a chance to read this book again. Do you have books like that? And if so, can you name one?
You know, it's funny. I don't reread books for the most part. I read them once and I hold on to them if I've absolutely loved them. But I find that I'm more interested in trying a new – every time I have the decision, should I reread this one, my favorite, or should I try something new? And I always opt for something new. So I'm really not one to reread books. I know I'm strange that way because all of my friends, you know
– No.
They reread books over and over again.
No. I don't read all of them. I have maybe five books that they're my go-to books, and they're not – except for one, not current. They are older books, so I understand that completely. Tell me something on your bucket list.
On my bucket list? Oh, gosh. Off the top of my head, I'd say to go to Australia.
Yeah,
I've
got
to get down under.
That would be a good one for sure.
Yeah.
And my last
question
to you is, what have you learned about yourself because you became a fiction novelist, since you've become a fiction novelist, what have you learned about yourself?
I've learned that because being a novelist was something that I had dreamed about, you know, from the time I was very little, I've learned that, and I've always believed this, that dreams do come true, but they come true because you make them come true. It's not something that just happens to you. Exactly.
Right.
You make them happen. And I've also learned that sometimes a dream is only seen by you. And I've learned that that's enough. That's enough. I mean, as long as you can
it really
see it
is.
Happening, that's all that you need.
Absolutely. A little bit of luck has to be involved. You got to be in the right place at the right time. But for the most part, you've got to work and fail and work harder and fail again and work, don't you think?
Right. I agree. And I say this to my kids all the time. It's, you know, and nowadays it looks as if there's so many overnight successes. But it's, and I always say to them, you know, you're not seeing the behind the scenes. You know, a lot of work
right.
goes into being successful. And you should expect it and you should want that. And that's something that Eric, getting back to Eric Davis and Raising Men, that's something that he talks about as well. It's all about every day, putting in the work every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dina Santorelli, it has been a joy to speak to you.
Same here. Thank you for having
me. Next book, oh, it's my pleasure. When the next book is out, I hope that you'll come back again, please. But in the meantime, who do you absolutely adore as your favorite female crime fiction writer?
Oh, gosh. Oh, my female favorite. Oh, gosh, do I have to pick one?
No. You can pick more.
I'm not sure who to say. I, off the top of my head, I think I want to say Karen Slaughter, but there's so many.
Well, so how about one day you come back and sit behind the microphone and interview Karen Slaughter, and I'll set that up.
Oh, my gosh, how wonderful would that be?
Would you
have
fun?
Oh, my God, talk about a bucket list.
Okay.
Karen, thank you. That would be
so
wonderful.
You and I are going to... We're going to talk about that. I cannot thank you enough for being with me tonight. You are just
you.
Spectacular.
Oh, gosh.
And keep in touch with me, please. So
I promise.
So that I know. On Wednesday, Danielle Girard is going to be here. That's going to be so much fun. Tomorrow, I'm spending an afternoon with one of my favorite people. We're not going to do a show because she has her own, but I will be with the glorious Jacqueline Michard tomorrow. Jacqueline Michard has a show here in this network called Scribes. She's going to be starting it again probably next week, but in the meantime, read, and especially read Dina's book. Thank you so much for being with me, everyone, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night, all. Good night, Dina.
Good night. Thank you again.
You're welcome.